The Super Bowl has come and gone, and the three-peat hopes are dead. Philly dismantled Kansas City. We're going to break it all down. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that sixth or seventh spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides. Good evening. You are listening to the Fumble Rooski Podcast, powered by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm your host this time around, CJ Medeiros. With me, of course, are my good friends, Adam Wright and Chris Kostich, and a very special guest from the Squawking Eagles podcast, our favorite Eagles fan, Mike Wartenby. First off, Mike, congratulations. Your Philadelphia Eagles are Super Bowl champs.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Again, a pleasure to be back for the third time within like the this month. So it's great to be back on here talking about the birds again. And I'm glad it's in a a good scenario that we're going to be talking about the Eagles, because the last time I guess we talked when they were in the Super Bowl, they did not win. So I'm happy to be here talking about my birds taking home Super Bowl 59.
You get some championship merch yet?
To tell you the truth, I am going after I were done recording here. My local store got their shipment in. And I'm going now to go get stuff.
Nice. There you go.
Yeah.
Good. Happy for you. So, to break it down again, the Philadelphia Eagles are Super Bowl 59 champions, putting the hurt on Kansas City 40-22. We're going to go around the horn here, give our takeaways. Mike, you're our special guest. We're starting with you.
Thanks, CJ. So, yeah, 40-22, it's a little bit deceiving. I don't think that 22 really should stand. Maybe 40-6. You know, that last touchdown, definitely that last touchdown was against Sidney Brown and Tristan McCollum. So there's a big drop-off. Now, those two guys are good, but it's a big drop-off. The Eagles dismantled the Chiefs. To be up at halftime 24-0, if you had told me that, I would have said, no, not at all. That was not going to be a thing. But the fact that it was 24-0 and it was 34-6 with like 3 minutes left in the third quarter, it was looking so good. The fact that this game was in the bag by the end of the third quarter, I was able to sit back and just soak it all in and just feel the amount of relief that the Eagles have finally won another Super Bowl in my lifetime. And you know, my first time they won the Super Bowl, I had to wait 37 years. And now to wait two more years to get the next one, after being losing it in 2023, I'm happy. I've been nonstop smile on my face for the past 3 days. So I'm good.
All right. You know, we love to see it. Anything else, like just on the game itself or?
You know, I think Jalen Hurts quieted every hater, denier of who he was and I'll call out Chris, Nick Wright and Dan Orlovsky and the whole panel from Wake Up, I guess. Jalen Hurts, they said, we're going to put the ball in his hands and take away Saquon. And they did. But Jalen Hurts proved to be that he is a top-notch guy. And to be on Colin Coward's worst quarterbacks left in the playoffs to be the last one standing, that's a lot to say about a quarterback. So the fact that Jalen was able to handle the blitz, pass when he needed to, change the plays if he had to, there's nothing he did wrong in my eyes that I could say, oh, look, see, he can't do that. He did everything right. Saquon Barkley still got 90 yards. Didn't get it 100, but still got his 90 yards. Oh, 90 combined yards. And, the defense. Like, if you could have given the MVP to the defense, like every single player on that team on defense, I would have been happy with that. That defense came up, and they heard all that repeat, three-peat stuff, and they were like, all right, well, we'll put a stop to that talk, and they did.
True. Adam?
I would like to partially walk back a couple of takes I've had for the past few years that have held up until this point.
Yeah.
The first part is the belief that a dual threat quarterback, a dual threat like Jalen Hurts or a Lamar Jackson, like a Mike Vick, those types of quarterbacks, the ones that are primarily running, I did not believe that they could win Super Bowls. Jalen Hurts proved that this past Sunday night.
Yeah.
And that was about as good of a postseason performance as I've seen a running quarterback ever make. And the belief was always that a really competitive team like the Chiefs would be able to stop the run and make the he'd make them essentially play left-handed, to put it in a metaphorical sense. Make them throw the ball. And Jalen Hurts was able to do that. I did not think a quarterback who relies mainly on his legs, complement to his arm, would be able to win just throwing the ball, but Jalen Hurts did it. He did it. Now, is this a way that I would build a team? Probably not.
Probably not.
But there's an exception to every rule. And in a situation like this, where, you know, you're facing a Chiefs team that's on the brink of three-peating, this is the greatest exception to the rule of all time. Another exception to the rule. I did not believe a team centered around their running back could win a Super Bowl. I thought those days were long gone. The last time it happened was Marshawn Lynch's run-first Seahawks with the Legion of Boom. They very nearly repeated that very next year in Super Bowl 49. The Patriots managed to stop that. Outside of that, in the last quarter century, we have not seen any really run-first teams win Super Bowls. Again, this is not still, I say partially walk back that take, both takes, because this is still not a way I would build a team. Usually the team on the other sideline wins, but there's an exception to every rule.
Right.
And boy, is there such, there could not have been such a good time for the exception to be applied. Philadelphia Eagles, they did it in the best way possible. And what a game.
Yeah.
What a season for the Eagles. They do everything that I said would never happen again. So right, well, congrats to them.
On our podcast, we stress run the ball, win the game. And if you run the ball appropriately and the amount of times that the Eagles did, you are going to win a game. And I'm all this, you know, defense wins championships, right? Defense, you know, that defense won a championship, but then that offense also, like, you know, I don't know if you guys are too young for watch the 85 Bears, but like the 85 Bears defense won that Super Bowl. I would say the Eagles defense won this Super Bowl, but also that offense had a lot to contribute to it too as well. So they really were like a balanced team, both offense and defense attacking that Chiefs team.
Yeah. And I guess to kind of carry off that point, you brought up the 85 Bears. I mean, you look at this Eagles team, and when they were healthy, they were easily probably the best team in the league. And they proved that by going out and winning the Super Bowl. Like, all their losses, they didn't have a completely healthy team. The loss against the Commanders, they didn't have Jalen Hurts for three quarters of the game. The loss to the Buccaneers, they didn't have AJ Brown or Devonta Smith. Trying to think of the other one.
And to the Falcons. They didn't have AJ Brown against the Falcons either.
That too. No. And so when they were healthy, best team in the league easily. And you could even argue that this is probably one of the best Super Bowl winning teams of all time as well. It just based off of, and maybe even one of the better defenses of all time as well. And the swing from last year having a bottom three defense to having the best defense in the league this year is absolutely insane, especially when you think about the changes that they made. The three biggest changes were drafting Quinyon Mitchell, drafting Cooper DeJean, and signing Luke Vaughn. Like, that was the three big changes that they made on defense. And on the offensive side of the ball, you lose Jason Kelce, but your O-line is still absolutely disgusting. And you added Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
So it's essentially the same roster as last year, plus a couple add-ons, and that was it.
Well, Jason Kelce retired and Fletcher Cox retired, and their replacements both became Pro Bowlers this year.
That too.
So that doesn't it. Yeah, that doesn't happen. That's not a normal thing to happen.
I forgot about Fletcher Cox as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, this like Mahomes never looked comfortable from the get-go. The Chiefs, their only first down in the first half was on the first play of the game, 11-yard pass to Juju. They kind of build off of how good the Eagles defense was in this game. Their list of teams that failed to cross midfield on their first nine drives of a game this season, the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. That's it.
Yeah, it's a short list.
Yeah.
It's a very short list. Very, very short list. And when you look at the box score of this game, like if you were to tell me Saquon Barkley had 25 carries for 57 yards, averaging under 2.5 yards per game or per carry. Jalen Hurts, 17 for 22, 221 yards, two touchdowns, one interception. Xavier Worthy, 8 catches, 157 yards, two touchdowns. And Mahomes, 21 for 32, 257 yards, three touchdowns, two interceptions. If you're just to read me the box score in itself, never don't even tell me the score. I'm thinking that the Chiefs won by three or one score at the very least.
Right.
That's how amazing this defense played. It was basically the entire defense. The Eagles defense was basically the entire story. Jalen Hurts probably played the most perfect game of his career, minus the interception. Because only five incomplete. Pardon?
Yeah, that interception because there was a missed block. You know, that's all that really was.
Yeah, five incompletions, and he had 11 carries for 72 yards and a tush-push touchdown. Jalen Hurts, this is probably the healthiest that we had seen him all season long, and he ran like it too. Yeah. Adam, you have a point.
Yeah, piggybacking off of your take on Jalen Hurts, Hurts may be, as far as being a postseason performer, he's as underrated as it gets.
True.
And just in the Super Bowls alone that he's been in, 7 touchdowns to just 1 pick. So as far as overall production, it's there. And it's there through the air and by the legs. So he's not a guy who just gets stopped in big games against the Chiefs of all teams, against a big time performer that a team that is known for putting its best foot forward when the lights are shining brightest. Jalen Hurts also shines. So
yeah,
another you thing guys to are add to Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, you guys are right. So first, I also want to echo what Adam says, that I also was of that class that the true dual threat, as in like the leaning run first quarterback, probably couldn't get it done. And yeah, you know, I was wrong. I think it's an exception to a rule? Yeah. But then again, Hurts went out there and he proved at least all of his doubters wrong. You know, you see people like that greasy know-it-all Nick Wright, and just seeing them eat crow is just a wonderful feeling, because though I'm not an Eagles fan, I hate Nick Wright. You know, and Colin Cowherd's like, oh, Jalen Hurts, one of the worst quarterbacks in the playoffs. Talk about it. Take the aged like milk. Yeah. So when I look at this game, perhaps it's an oversimplified explanation, but it is something that I want to say. And Mike, I feel like you might agree. When you look at how the teams carried themselves walking in, the Chiefs, I feel like, got overconfident. They had this air of entitlement. During media days, you saw people, especially like Kelce and DeAndre Hopkins speaking, there was this smugness to them. And I just think that when you boil it down, plain and simple, Philly wanted it more than Kansas City did. Kansas City, I think, was expecting to win. I feel like Kansas City, you know, went in there and saying, oh, you know, we're going to win, no sweat. It's what we always do. In fact, Mahomes and Kelce literally like went out to like this highly publicized dinner like the night before the game. No, that's obviously not something you do. And as a result, Philly wanted it more. They were the so-called, you know, the dogs again. That's right. What they were. And plain and simple, they wanted it more. They worked harder and they got it. And when we were talking about the Super Bowl and we said, here's how Philly can win, they did exactly that. You had to get out to a fast start. punch Kansas City in the mouth, put the ball in their court, and make them play from behind. Because everyone keeps talking about, you know, Patrick Mahomes' supposed clutch gene. Sure. Sure, you can win when you're down one score, but what about when you're down two? What about when you're down three? Oh, you know,
four, five. They were down five. They were five, five scores.
Five score game at one point. You're right. And it was, and yeah, it was just a utter shellacking. I didn't expect this. I thought the Eagles were going to be in the lead for a bit before, you know, flag. And I was worried, especially with that first one. But, you know,
yeah.
Philly got a bit of a makeup call, and it was pretty good since then. And I'm just shocked at the Chiefs. I mean, don't get me wrong. On paper, Philly's way more talented, but can't believe I'm about to say this because, you know, I mean, you, Mike, obviously know Andy Reid as an Eagles fan. And you know who he is. Andy Reid flat out got out-coached. Steve Spagnuolo got out-coached. They were out game plan. They are prepared, and even the talent was there. Just the game planning wasn't. And I'm stunned. Just sloppy plays. Mahomes outright just missing throws, careless drops, costly penalties. It's like all that nonsense the Chiefs pulled throughout the entire year. You know, where we said, you know, you're the worst 15 win ever. Every one of us who said that, we are now vindicated.
Yes.
For saying it. All of that, like, you know, your tricks stopped working when the light shone brightest. And honestly, you can't even say Kansas City lost the game. Philly just won. That's really what it is. Philadelphia won that game. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, for the most part, they did an effective job of keeping a lid on Saquon Barkley. So Jalen Hurts just decided to expose the Chiefs' pass defense. And, you know, we were talking about, and, you know, when Adam and I were doing the defensive comparisons, we were talking about, oh, the front seven's close. Because, you know, the Chiefs front seven, you know, you got guys like Omenihu, Bolton, Chenal, Jones. But the difference was, we said, the back four, where Philly greatly outclassed them. And Philly put the clamps on them for most of the game, except for, you know, those garbage time scores. Well, like you said, the real score was 40-6. Yeah. Mahomes had, and I said this before you got on there, Mahomes had what I would call a classic Matt Stafford game. Right. You know, where Stafford was on the Lions, he'd get brutalized for three quarters, then throw for like 100 yards and two touchdowns in the fourth, you know, try to dress up the score. But make no mistake, it was bad. So that is that for our Super Bowl recap. Once again, congrats to Philly. But we want to dive a little deeper into Philly. They have now won their second title in franchise history. I guess the question is, in the words of the Talking Heads, how did I get here? We are, and if you guys like to talk ahead, you will know. So that is up next. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns. Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides. Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast, brought to you by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Web Consulting. Once again, I'm CJ Medeiros. With me, of course, Adam Wright, Chris Kostich, and special guest Mike Wortonby of the Squawking Eagles Podcast, repping his Super Bowl champion Eagles. So, as mentioned, Philadelphia has won their second title in franchise history. We're going to reminisce over the journey, how they got there, and just anything else, any other insights we want to add that we didn't really talk about, at least from the Philly perspective from our first segment. Mike, what do you make of this overall? Just how'd they get there?
Let's see. The Eagles ended last season on a pretty terrible note. And if you had told me this time last year that we would be talking about the Eagles Super Bowl victory against the Chiefs, I'd be saying you're crazy, but they went through a period of time where there was locker room problems with players and players' wives, and they got the players that they were involved with that they left and they went through the regime of getting a new offensive coordinator yet again and a new defensive coordinator yet again, and Vic Fangio got booted out of Miami because they said his tactics were no good. And then the Eagles get Kellen Moore, and everybody's like, well, you know, he had a good Dallas team, but he did terrible in San Diego, L.A. So the Eagles have these two coordinators, and they start out 2-2. And I was week five by. I was like, fire Nick Sirianni. We got to fire him because he probably shouldn't have had started, you know, in a lot of people's minds. He probably shouldn't have started the season. But he said, hire whoever you want as coordinator, and I'll just, you know, do what I can. And they did. They just hired their coordinators, and he just did what he can. And we're finding out that it was his idea to put Mekhi Becton at guard and take him from tackle to guard. That was an amazing idea to do, and he did, and it worked. And we're finding out that he was able to, like, tweak things and make the team congeal. And during the Super Bowl interviews at the end of the game, more and more players are saying his quote, like, his quote, you can't be great without the greatness of others. If the players are buying into that and they're repeating it over and over and through interviews, not just one, two, three, four guys, that means those guys have bought into what he has to say, and they've put their egos, they've checked their egos at the door. They're like, all right, we're one team here. We're one family. And it, whatever he did, like the magic he has, like 700 win percentage and two Super Bowl appearances in 4 years, only two other coaches have ever done that before in their first 4 years of coaching. So the Eagles, after that week five bye, turned it on. They went on a 10-game win streak. They lost the Washington because of Jalen Hurts was hurt. And then they went through the playoffs, scoring the most points ever in postseason history, 145 points. And they only trailed by 5 minutes and 43 seconds like that throughout the whole playoffs. They only trailed by 5 minutes. And never trailed in the second, third, or fourth quarter. Like, that's unheard. They went on a run that I've never seen before. At least never seen before in a Philadelphia Eagles team.
Adam?
Yeah, so I want to take an even deeper dive, go even further back than that. Obviously, 2017, the Eagles managed to win the Super Bowl. And I'll never forget Lane Johnson, what he said right after the win, which is that, he said, I'd rather win one having fun than win five and be miserable. Mm. And sure enough, that Eagles championship window in the late 2010s was very short-lived. They barely made the playoffs the next year at 9-7. Then they barely made it again at 9-7 again. Then they kind of had to dismantle the team a little bit. They tanked the very next season. Let's take a trip over to college. Jalen Hurts in the 2018 national championship. He gets benched for Tua Tagovailoa halfway through the game. Tua ends up being the hero. They win the game. He transfers. It seems like it's the end of Jalen Hurts. But for the Sooners, in his senior year, he was the runner-up for the Heisman. And he worked his way up into the 2020 NFL draft boards, and he made it into the second round. He was drafted by the Eagles. He was still the backup to their franchise quarterback at the time, Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz gets benched. In goes Jalen Hurts. He impressed at the end of the season. He gets his first start for a full season in 2021.
Yep.
Finished 9-8, barely made the playoffs. What do they need to do? They need to lean a little bit more into their passing game. They trade for A.J. Brown. They made the Super Bowl the very first year with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith as their pass-catching core. But what happened in that Super Bowl? They lost. The very next year, they lost in the wild card. What happens? They said, we need to lean more into our running game. We need to be more balanced of an offensive attack. If we're going to be a run-first team, we can't have DeAndre Swift being the threat. It has to be someone better. Who ended up hitting the market somehow, some way? The franchise running back for their rival, New York Giants. And they let him go. He goes to the Eagles. And sure enough, they have a great season, 14-3 record. The season didn't start great, but they gelled as the season went on. Nick Sirianni got a little bit more humble. Actually, no, not a little bit. He looks like a completely different person now. The way he talks, everything, his persona, it's great. They bulldozed their way into a Super Bowl and won it in a blowout. What an unbelievable rebuild this was. What a roller coaster ride it has been for the Philadelphia Eagles. Going from their 2017 victory over the Patriots in Super Bowl 52 all the way till now. I mean, you go from the top of the mountain down over to here, quickly back up, down, back up. Unbelievable. And the story, in the center of the story, is certainly Jalen Hurts. Just a true underdog story where the kid just is constantly knocked off his feet, going all the way back to college and managing to work his way into the starting lineup each and every time he's knocked down. Great story. And just, we'll see if the Eagles can keep it up, but what they were able to accomplish, no one can take that away from them. And Jalen Hurts as well.
Mm-hmm. Chris?
I've got not much to add. I think it's crazy how, you know, the Eagles went from, you know, Jalen Hurts' rookie year. He starts halfway through the season or whenever it was. He ends up getting the starting nod over Carson Wentz. Last game of the season, Doug Peterson decides he's going to throw in the third stringer halfway through the game in the most tanking move that you'll ever see, because the third stringer earned some snaps. And everyone just looked at the Eagles as a joker of an organization. And the turnaround from that point on is pretty insane. And I think Sirianni kind of said it best as well during postgame, was adversity. The Eagles dealt with adversity probably better than anyone in the last, pretty much ever since last season ended for them, with all the rah-rah from the media. Nick Sirianni's a jackass. A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts can't get along. A.J. Brown's a cancer. This and that, you name it. And they just blocked out all the noise and got the job done. And, you know, maybe Nick Sirianni should get a little bit more respect now, because he currently has the winningest. He's currently the winningest head coach since he joined the league amongst the current NFL head coaches right now. So maybe put a little bit more respect to his name. But yeah, I don't really have much to add about to compare to what you guys already said.
Yeah. So the thing with Nick Sirianni, like you guys have said, is he has, feels weird saying this about a grown man, but he has matured so much. He was originally just so unlikable, just so unbearable, type of guy who would talk smack to opposing fans once he was already in the tunnel and they couldn't hit him with anything. He would even beef with his own fans, but the turnaround, just like Adam said, he's a completely different person. That's something you can't be ignored. And I'm older than in fact, I'm the youngest out of all of us here, but I do remember when they drafted Jalen Hurts. Oh yeah, no, Mike, Adam and Chris are older than me, but whatever. But yeah, I do remember when Philly drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round out of Oklahoma. I was in the area back then, and you know, a lot of people did not like the pick. And Eagles organization, especially Doug Peterson, said, well, you know, we can use him as a gadget player. And they're like,
right,
you don't draft a gadget guy in the second round. Yeah. And hey, you know, you got your QB1, Wentz flamed out, but didn't matter because you still had Hurts. And, you know, you hired Sirianni, and you're going good. You know, you lose the Super Bowl. That sucks. But then after that weird upset loss to Tampa, you needed to ace this offseason. That's what they did. They brought in Vic Fangio, you know, who Miami foolishly discarded. You took a chance on Kellen Moore. That was great. And then here's the crazy thing. You bring in Saquon, and I assure you, Mara is losing a lot of sleep. You brought in Zach Bond, who the Saints just literally could not use right, who I believe was first-team All-Pro. You drafted Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean, who I said, you know, they were a little too young to be considered great, but nah, you got some dogs there. They no rookie learning curve for them. And C.J. Gardner-Johnson came back. Heck, you brought in Mekhi Becton, who started 15 games, who looked like a bust, and now is now, I believe, your right guard for a Super Bowl winning offensive line.
Yeah.
You aced everything, and there was some adversity at the beginning of the year. You know, you're 2-2. Nick Sirianni, you know, is using his kids to shield himself from the media, which look, that not even Loki. That was a scummy move, but you can't see this Sirianni doing it.
No,
you know, he put himself in check. The team really, you know, they did some soul searching and they just brought it together. This offseason, especially, is really what turned it around. New coordinators almost entirely rebuilt that defense. And just you did a complete 180, and they deserve to hoist that trophy. And I do want to look to the future here. The Eagles and Chiefs are co-favorites for Super Bowl 60.
Yep.
And how is Philly going to get there? So I just want to point out real quick, they are 18th in the league in cap space. They have $24.4 million. And I don't want to rain on anyone's parade, especially because, you know, I have a lot of respect for Philly for taking down KC, but you're probably going to lose Brandon Graham to retirement. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, he came back. He, you know, he tore his muscle in his arm. And so he thought he was out for the tricep. That's right. And he came back. He fought back and he played a heck of a game too. He was really in there. So yeah, he's probably going to retire at the end of the season.
Yep. Maybe he has a spot in Canton. I know that's been something for debate in the NFL media, so who knows? Next, Josh Sweat, that's huge. Zach Bond, Mekhi Becton, Avante Maddox, Milton Williams, Fred Johnson, who is a pretty good swing lineman for you guys. Piece linebacker, Oren Burks. Sorry, I didn't want to cut you off.
You're naming all these guys that came, who stepped in and had a hell of a Super Bowl. Bond, interception. Oren Burks came in and took over for N'Kobe Dean. Mekhi Becton, like, he was a first round pick by the Jets and then cast off and became a guard. Milton Williams, 2 sacks and a fumble recovery in the Super Bowl. Josh Sweat, 2 sacks in the Super Bowl. All these guys made money during that for themselves in the offseason by the game they played in the Super Bowl.
True. However, I've heard that at least Sweat might be willing to take less money. So there is that.
Yeah.
You do have $24 million, though. You can obviously move some stuff around. A lot of GMs do. But honestly,
Howie's good at that.
Yeah, he's
Adam's sweating.
Oh, Adam's got like glint in his eye. Oh, what's he going to say?
I'm just looking at a guy who's playing on the right side of the offensive line. I'm looking at the Patriots' open spot at right guard. I'm just saying, Mekhi Becton might make a great Patriot over there. Oh my God, they need it.
You know, it would be a funny middle finger to the Jets, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be.
I have one more thing to point out, but Adam, you can finish your point if you wanted to.
Who knew that the Jets all these years they've been starting a star guard at tackle. For all these years, and the Eagles took him and said, "We're turning this guy into a Super Bowl champion. Then we're turning him over to your rivals, and they're going to make him work too. And we'll give you the finger on our way out."
Yeah,
it's a very Jetsy move, Chris.
What are you going to do? One last thing about Sirianni. I saw a funny tweet, and I was just like, "This almost makes sense." And I couldn't believe that Sirianni was getting so much hate. Now, Mike, you can shoot this down if you want, but Nick Sirianni, before this maturity stretch that he's been on, was just the most Philly guy you could potentially have as the Philadelphia Eagles head coach because he represents what people deem Philly as scumbags. And I almost took it as, well, it kind of makes sense because you look at, say, the Celtics head coach, Joe Mazzulla. He's a fucking psycho. And everybody in Boston loves him.
Yeah.
The difference is now you're winning. Sirianni's now winning. So now everyone doesn't hate him because he's winning. So he can kind of be a scumbag or be that type of guy that represents who Philly is. It's the same thing with Mazzulla. He's a fucking psycho, represents Bostonians that are psychotic. Kind of goes hand in hand.
It really does. Like when the Eagles are losing, nobody, like myself included, I didn't want this guy around. Like after his first interview, he was talking about plants and stuff and growing plants. you know, I was like, what are you talking about? Like, what is going, like, this is not at all going to make sense. But now flash forward, those seeds he planted in that news conference grew in this Super Bowl. You can see it. Like, it worked. It worked.
Yeah.
But Philly doesn't think that way. It has to be now. It has to be like, it has to be what we know. Like, we know that defense is big. We need to have defense. And if you have a good defense and you can run the ball, then you can do it. But he was passing the ball. Like, you got to run. You got to run. And then he started feeling it, started understanding it. But hey, you know, I said it. We just recorded last night, and I will not say anything bad about Nick Sirianni for the rest of his career as an Eagle. I won't. I'm done.
Understandable. But yeah, so we're going to be moving on to our next topic. There's an elephant in the room, and his name is Patrick Mahomes. People are saying he's on the fast track to being the GOAT, but now we might be pumping the brakes a bit. We're going to talk about that next on the Fumble Rooski podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns. Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides. Welcome back. You are, of course, listening to the Fumble Rooski podcast, brought to you by Power88 Dean Radio and, of course, Secret Web Consulting. I'm CJ Medeiros, and as you know, with me is Adam Wright, Chris Kostet, special guest from the Squawking Eagles podcast, Mike Wartenby. All right, we've talked Philly to death, and now, guess what, Casey? It's your turn. So, people are saying there's now a GOAT debate between Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady. Yeah, maybe if he three-peated, but he did not. And not only did the Chiefs lose as covered, they lost in spectacular fashion. Just a blowout. As the kids are saying these days, belt to ass. And Mahomes, we might need to have a talk about your legacy right now. So, Mike, where does Mahomes stand exactly?
You know, Mahomes he's a young quarterback still, so he's got still a lot of time. Is it in his possibilities that he's going to three-peat? He's not going to have a three-peat team. And, you know, Andy Reid, I don't know how many years he has left. I think Andy Reid is his muse. He knows how to run the ball, through Patrick Mahomes. So I'm interested to see what he does with another coach. This team is not going to be the same within the next, say, 2 or 3 years, because Spags is going to retire soon. Andy Reid can't go on forever. And so eventually we're going to really see who Patrick Mahomes is. And, you know, it's really hard for me to say, but I don't like Patrick Mahomes. So as a player, he hasn't impressed me. I'm not impressed by him. I'm really not. I see him running around in the backfield. He tosses the ball, and he happens to, Travis Kelce just happens to be open a lot. I don't know how that happens, but he is open a lot. I don't know. I've never been a fan of Patrick Mahomes. I don't think you're going to see another Super Bowl out of Patrick Mahomes at all. I really don't. I don't think he's going to win another Super Bowl, because, you know, speaking about Eagles stopping a dynasty, I think the Eagles just started a dynasty. And we're going to see Eagles in the Super Bowl quite a few times now.
Could very well be. Adam, I know you were flabbergasted.
You like that?
I like the boldness.
Boldness is one way to describe it.
That's what happens when you come off of Super Bowl win. I'm not going to hold a lot back. Not going to hold up.
Yeah, understand.
We're used to the feeling.
Yeah.
I'd like to point out a few narratives that have already been done to death. So I'll just mention it quick. In 2 Super Bowl losses, in five Super Bowls that Patrick Mahomes has been to, 7 interceptions. In 10 Super Bowls that Tom Brady has been to, 6 interceptions. In 4 Super Bowls. In 4 Super Bowls that Joe Montana has been to, 0 interceptions. The only one with more in 5 Super Bowls, John Elway, 8 interceptions. John Elway is actually like famously bad in Super Bowls generally. 3-8 touchdown interception ratio for John Elway. He is, yeah, he's made it to 5 Super Bowls. And that is where I'll start, is the fact him getting there is still really good. If you are one of 3 quarterbacks of all time to go to at least 5 Super Bowls, that's still great. And I hear a lot of that. It's the defense. It's saying, well, are you faulting him for getting there with the chance to make it to win the Super Bowl? Of course not. It's great that you got there. But what we're pointing out is your performance once you got there, because it was not good. So in one sense, yes, this season he helped his legacy because he made it back to the Super Bowl. He's one of 3 to make it to 5. On another hand, now in 2 Super Bowl losses, you've thrown 4 interceptions. All 3 of your touchdowns that you've thrown were garbage time touchdowns. It was after you were down 34-0. And it was practically the fourth quarter when they started happening. And you turned the ball over a total of 5 times during that span, including that fumble the other night. So overall, in a way, that night did hurt you. Getting there helped, yes. So that's one thing I wanted to point out. Another thing that I've noticed, another narrative that's starting to come up is Tom Brady didn't win his 4th Super Bowl until he was 37. This kind of gives off the vibe that people are trying to say that it's easy to win Super Bowls that late in your career. And to that, I have all of the ages. I collected this data this morning. I have all of the ages of the elite quarterbacks that you know and love when they won their last Super Bowl. You ready? Tom Brady, age 43. Peyton Manning, age 39. John Elway, age 38. Johnny Unitas, age 37. End of list for 37-year-olds and older.
But those were all amazing teams.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, those were amazing teams. Like, I don't know what kind of team is Patrick Mahomes going to be on when he's 37. That's a good question.
Sure. But that team that Tom Brady was on when he was 41, highly flawed. Highly flawed team. Their wide receiver 1 was Julian Edelman. He's fine. But outside of that, you had Josh Gordon for 10 games. Unreliable receiver. You had just that past offseason traded away Brandon Cooks. Rob Gronkowski was a shell of his former self.
I just want to mention, when you say unreliable, he was unreliable in the sense he couldn't pass a drug test. He was probably one of the most talented receivers I've ever seen.
Josh Gordon.
Yes. But he was past his prime. We did not get the best version of Josh Gordon. We got a good version of him.
We got a great version of Josh Gordon. What are you saying?
I remember him against Indy, man. That was nuts.
But that Cleveland version of him in 2013, boy, was that guy a killer. That guy could have been one of the best receivers of all time, and he wasted his career. We're not going to get into the Josh Gordon stuff. We're on the quarterback stuff. All right? Those 4 are the only guys who have won 37 and older. Here's the other ones. Joe Montana, age 34. Terry Bradshaw, age 31. Troy Aikman, age 30. Drew Brees, age 30. Aaron Rodgers, age 27. Brett Favre, age 27. And this is a little disorganized. I'm going to Steve Young now, age 33. Bart Starr, age 33. Matthew Stafford, age 33. Now, Stafford could win another Super Bowl, technically. But go down the list. It's not a slam dunk that, like, all I'm saying, Chiefs fans and anyone who loves Patrick Mahomes or respects him, don't take for granted the fact that you guys made it to 5 Super Bowls. You never know when this one could be your last. And there was a 10-year gap between Brady's 3rd and 4th championship, but he had to fight tooth and nail to get back there. And it was at that point, you remember during that one, I think it was a 60 Minutes interview, Tom Brady literally said to the interviewer, he said, is this it? Is this all there is to this NFL thing? Right after the 2004 victory. And he gets punched in the teeth twice by Eli Manning in the Super Bowl. Lost in a couple AFC championships in heartbreaking fashion to the Broncos and to the Ravens. Got the shit beat out of you. in the divisional round by your own division rival in Mark Sanchez. And at this point, it's like, holy crap, this is a lot harder than you think. Then they started winning it again because they stopped taking for granted the fact that you're just going to make it to Super Bowls and win them. So at some point, it does get a little harder. They have made it look easy. You can all concede the Chiefs have made it look easy, just make Super Bowls. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean it's going to stay that way. And I think if Mahomes is going to win another Super Bowl, if he hits a cold streak, it could be a little while if he actually does win a Super Bowl. And I think there's a chance he does. I think they can build up another team. I think they're going to age out. Travis Kelce is eventually going to retire. Andy Reid might retire. And they're going to have to build this team back up. They can do it. But they're going to have to fight through a lot of stuff in order to get there. And it's no guarantee because there's only been four other quarterbacks who have won a Super Bowl at that late of an age. So just don't take it for granted.
I think with this thing about Mahomes and his legacy, like, I feel like that there shouldn't have been a go conversation. There shouldn't have been any go talk at all. There shouldn't be any from now on until Mahomes is somewhere around seven rings, maybe eight rings once if he gets there. But you definitely close the door on it for at least the next 10 years. But yeah, that's the thing with Mahomes. Like, you bring up the touchdown interception ratio. Like, that's the thing with Mahomes. He's always been kind of turnover heavy. He's a guy that loves to take risks, loves to take shots, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But when you look at this game, he just never felt confident with what was going on. Didn't look like himself. Held on to the ball for too long. Like, there comes a point where you just got to get rid of the football. And you could also potentially mount that to maybe the play calling that the Chiefs are having as well. Should have probably had more quick plays instead of these longer developing plays that would allow the Eagles to rush you more frequently. But when we actually talk about Mahomes' legacy in general, like, yeah, when you look at all the other quarterbacks and what they did, like, Brady never got blown out. This is the second time that Mahomes has been blown out. Now, granted, the first time around, it didn't get that way until the second half. And Mahomes basically put the team on his back and did whatever the hell he could to make plays happen, like, to the point where he's throwing with his body parallel to the ground. In this game, it was just an all-around belt-to-ass game. Like, there was nothing that Mahomes could have done that. I mean, Mahomes had a terrible, terrible game. It wasn't like the O-line just sold out on him. Like, Mahomes played like shit himself. But yeah, at this point, I feel like that you drop him back down to the Joe Montana tier of, okay, Montana's undefeated in the Super Bowl. Look at his numbers. Like, those Super Bowls that Montana had, none of them were close besides one. And it was a last minute touchdown drive. All of Mahomes, like, the games that Mahomes has played in, yeah, they're all close. But then you take into account the two blowouts, like, he never lost a game where it was a one-score game. So, And with the facts of the matter, too, I feel like with what we're seeing out of quarterbacks today, I feel like that the age limit on a quarterback lifespan is starting to drop back a little bit now too. So, you know, we mentioned that Mahomes is 29. For all we know, he probably has max 7 years left because there's no one that's going to be playing till age 43 like Brady did. Manning stopped at 40. Favre went farther than he should have into 43. Matt Ryan didn't reach 40. Aaron Rodgers is barely reaching 40. Like, he reached 40, but, like, he probably, for all we know, probably shouldn't be. Matt Stafford's getting up there. Some other guys are getting up there, and I just feel like that Mahomes has a shorter lifespan than what we're probably expecting, especially with the type of quarterback that he is. So I think that the window is a little bit more shut than what we may realize.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Now, I don't want to be all doom and gloom with Mahomes and I'll never win again, or the window might be more shut than we realize. But I think it's vastly important that we do take stock of the situation. At least for the GOAT debate, like I said, pump the brakes. No, don't pump the brakes, slam on them. The gap's a lot bigger than you realize. And there are some arguments that the Chiefs fans are throwing out that I like to debunk. So you guys mentioned, you know, the whole touchdown or the interceptions in the Super Bowl. How he is more in 5 than Brady had in 10. Another thing that you guys mentioned was, you know, how they say things like, well, Mahomes and Brady are both 3-2 in their first 5 starts. And you also mentioned about how, well, cool, yeah, Brady literally, you know, you alluded to it at least, but I'm going to say it outright. Brady won 3 Super Bowls before his first playoff loss. And all of his Super Bowls were one-score games. By the way, Adam, I know you were muted, but bless you. I saw you sneeze. Just bless you, buddy. But yeah, going back to what I was saying, Brady's largest margin of defeat actually came, you know, against the Eagles, 8 points, which is still a touchdown, 2-point conversion, technically 1-score game. When Mahomes loses both of his losses, it was just a beatdown. And part of, you know, being an effective quarterback, the GOAT, as it were, is how you carry yourself. You know, what do you do? And you remember Tom Brady in Super Bowl 51 running up and down the sideline or being on the bench, yelling at his guys, like rallying the troops, saying, no fear, laser focus. Mahomes sat on the sideline third quarter and he was pouting. He would not talk to anybody. He was a sullen child. That's what he was. It was just childish. It's just not what you want to see out of your franchise quarterback when adversity is facing him and he just is like, no, I don't want to play anymore. That's basically the vibe that it gives. How he's just sitting there, head down, just not interacting with anybody, not talking to the players, not talking to the coaches. That is just soft behavior. And I'm sure he's looking back and he's kicking himself. But no, I'm not saying you're going to come back from 34 down. Obviously not. But it just sends the wrong message. Of course, that was how the team was. You know, members of the O-line crying. Chris Jones on his hands and knees. Kelsey doing what Mahomes did, but worse. Who, by the way, ducked the media after the game. A lot of people don't say that. But he did not talk to him. Yeah, literally just like ran back to the bus with his tail between his legs. But yeah, for Kansas City, this is bad. At least, and for the GOAT debate, I'm sorry, I don't care, Chiefs fans. The gap is a lot wider than I think you are willing to admit. And even beyond that, you know, you could say, oh, well, Mahomes actually ahead of the eight ball. Well, look, Mahomes runs a lot more than Brady do. And I don't know if you saw, do you guys know it's coming this offseason? The NFL is saying how, like, when quarterbacks start to sell, they're not going to throw the flag. Like when you're just hugging the sideline and then flop once you're out of bounds, if you get breathed on, the flag's staying in your back pocket. And that's basically going to give these defenders a green light once you're out of the pocket to start lighting you up, which is how it should be. But, and yeah, so that's going to take a toll on your body, especially when you scramble, because Mahomes was taking a beating. Like every time he rolled out of the pocket, holding onto the ball for way too long, oftentimes getting 3 seconds to throw. Yeah, but yeah, right before, you know, you're getting lit up by, you know, Milton Williams or Josh Sweat or Jalen Carter or who else decides they want to get their sack. And I'm not saying, well, Brady would never, but yeah, no, Brady would never get absolutely demolished in a Super Bowl. And look, I do think we're dropping him back down to that Montana Manning status, which it's still a good status, but I'm not enthralled. And there's something, one last point I'd like to make. People saying, well, he got to the Super Bowl 3 times. Okay, and so did Tom Brady. This is something Adam and I were talking about yesterday. Tom Brady, or actually, no, we'll start with Mahomes. Mahomes made the Super Bowl 3 times, won 2, got complacent, and got annihilated in his third one. Brady, on the other hand, won 1,
went back, lost, and then defeated the Super Bowl hangover to win again. I'm sorry, that there's the end of the debate. Adam, you look like you want to say something?
Yeah, I just want to give one disclaimer to my opening take about quarterbacks and the age they won their last Super Bowl. So, yes, I gave the cutoff at four quarterbacks to win it at age 37 or older. Technically, Earl Morrall is a Super Bowl champion, but he wasn't the starter. He was benched for the Super Bowl for Bob Greese. Not counting.
He doesn't count.
It was, yeah.
And Bob Greese was... Bob Greasy.
Greasy, Adam. Greasy, know your Bob, NFL Bob, history.
Bob Greasy.
What did I say?
Grease. Bob Greasy.
Grease, like the country. No, it's not, though. But it's all right. You know, we live and we learn.
I just want to the debate of the whole goat. I don't like saying goat because I figure that only goes to somebody who their career has ended and they're done with. Then you could give it to that GOAT status. Giving it to, like, I feel like
Brady was a little different, though. Like, he got to five, and it was like, all right, like, no one else has gotten five.
Right. So I was not a big Brady fan, okay? I know you guys are big Brady guys. I wasn't. And a lot of people were not, right? But when he went to Tampa Bay, something clicked for me. And I'm like, oh, I get it. I see what he can do. I see what he does. And then I watched his documentary with Charles Woodson, and it all kind of cleared up for me. And I appreciate him now. I appreciate him. But when he was playing and everybody saying he was great, like, I was a big Joe Montana guy. I loved Joe Montana. And for some people to say Joe Montana is not great anymore, like, that hurt my soul. Like, that it hurt me. Let's say, like, what? Joe Montana? Like, Joe Montana was the Mount Everest of quarterbacks. Like, no one's going to be ever better than Joe Montana in my lifetime. And then there's Tom Brady. I'm like, yeah, now I can say after Tom Brady's gone, and he's the best. He is the GOAT. But to talk about it with Patrick Mahomes, who's his career is just starting, and he's got so much more ahead of him, it's not fair to him. It's not fair to him. It really isn't. So that's just my two cents.
Yeah.
No, it's really not fair to him. And honestly, yeah, like I said, we got to kind of pump the brakes on this whole go talk. And don't get me wrong, what he has accomplished in this short of a time frame is nothing short of incredible. But on the flip side, you know, you kind of have to realize, you know, maybe we like take a step back and we say, oh, yeah, you know, especially after this most recent Super Bowl, the gap's a lot wider than a lot of people, Chiefs fans, were willing to talk about. And one last thing, stop using the O-line as an excuse. I let it slide that first Super Bowl. This time, no. Joe Tooney, Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, you don't get that excuse. There was just better game planning from Vic Fangio than there was from Andy Reid and Matt Nagy. And that, my fellow Americans, is the truth. So instead of going to break, I want to kind of keep this train of thought going. Forget the Mahomes legacy and GOAT debate. What's the state of the dynasty after the loss? Where do they go from here? Mike, you mind if I see this one to Chris? Because he looks like a guy. He's got something to say.
Go.
What was yours?
It gets put in the fucking can, I can tell you that much. Look, it's great. It's great.
I'm sorry,
it's great. Go. Like, look, and here's the other thing. Like, you know, a lot of people compare the Chiefs dynasty to the Patriots dynasty. Like, here's the thing. Like, you're not expected to win every single time you make it to the Super Bowl. Like, the thing with the Patriots dynasty, yeah, it went on for 20 years or whatever, however many years it was. And they won the division basically every single year. They were in the AFC Championship every year from 2011 to 2018. They didn't win every single time. The thing was, the success outside of actually winning the Super Bowl, was the fact that they were in contention every single year. When you look at the Chiefs, yeah, they're in contention every single year. They made it to the Super Bowl five times. But when you compare this dynasty to every other dynasty, they either didn't lose, or when they did lose, aka the Patriots, they didn't get their shit kicked in. The Chiefs have gotten their shit kicked in twice. The Patriots, three times they lost was by one score. The Steelers dynasty in the 70s, they never lost. Cowboys dynasty, never lost. Niners dynasty, they never lost. Throughout the Packers dynasty, even before the Super Bowl was even a thing, they never lost. Like
1960, they lost.
68, pardon.
1960, they did.
60, yeah. My fault. But the Packers were in contention every single year, and you're not expected to win every single Super Bowl or championship that you go to. And it's amazing that you even get that far to begin with. There's no taking that away. But with the way that you lose, maybe the way you win, you get knocked down a couple of pedestals. And the problem with this Chiefs team is that their lack of talent on offense this year was what finally caught up to them. And the Eagles finally did what no other team was able to do. Punch them in that mouth early and just keep stepping on their throat every single minute the rest of the way. That's what every other team failed to do. Bills somehow failed to do it, but McDermott's a jackass. So That's basically where the Chiefs dynasty lies now. It doesn't, it's not as good as what people make it out to be anymore. And yeah, it's great that Mahomes was able to carry a lackluster offense to the Super Bowl. Like, I mean, think about the offenses that Brady has had. Like, some of the offenses weren't great, but some of the statistics that the Patriots had on offense was because Brady was doing most of the work. Like, the reason why the Pats had a top five offense was because of Brady. You look at the offense for the Chiefs this year, nowhere near being a top five offense. Their defense was fine. They had a solid defense, but really it's not how you finish, it's how you end. And yeah, for the Patriots, they didn't end on top, but the Patriots dynasty didn't crash and burn as hard at, like, they could have easily went to the Super Bowl that 2019 year and got their shit kicked in by the Niners. Say they were the ones to face the Niners. They could have easily lost in that game if they were to make it that far. I'm not trying to rewrite history or anything. Thing with the Patriots dynasty or any other dynasty is that you had the chance. There's the possibility that you were the second best roster going out onto that field. Multiple times the Patriots did not have the best roster going out onto the field. You could argue they didn't. 01 definitely did not have the best roster. 03, you could argue that they were the best roster. 04, same thing. You could put that to a toss-up between the Patriots and the Eagles that year on who the best roster was. 2007, obviously, Patriots best roster. 2011, same thing. 2014, you could make the argument the Seattle Seahawks had the best roster. 2016, I feel like the Patriots had a much better roster that year. 2017, kind of a toss-up. I would probably lean the Eagles on who had a better roster in 2017. 2018, the Rams that year could argue they had a much better roster than the Patriots that year. But when you look at the Chiefs, like, they probably debatably had a better roster for half of those Super Bowls, and they shit the bed in two of them. It's not like Tampa Bay, the Super Bowl against Tampa Bay, they probably didn't have the best roster, but they didn't look like that they deserved to be there. This year, they definitely did not have the better roster than Philly, and they most certainly looked like that they didn't belong to be there, belong there at all. Every dynasty, they made it look like they belong there. Whereas the Chiefs, sometimes, like, I had a buddy, we're playing Xbox, and I had a buddy on the mic, and he was like, and this is after the Bills game, and he's like, is Mahomes even good? And I was like, yeah. He's still good. He's still really good. And he was like, but why? I was like, I mean, he still makes plays happen, but, like, I'm not going to try to go out here and try to compare him to the other quarterbacks of the 2010s that I would probably argue would have given the giving the Chiefs a much better chance than what Mahomes played on Sunday. That's kind of where I'm at for the Chiefs dynasty, but you definitely, unfortunately, knocked the Chiefs dynasty down a couple pedestals because of it. Like, you wonder if this is a better dynasty than the freaking Cowboys dynasty, the Steelers dynasty, the Niners dynasty. You're not comparing it to the Patriots dynasty anymore. You're wondering if it's better than the other ones from pre-2000s.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's over yet, but Mike, where do you stand?
I don't know if it's over yet.
I'm not trying to say it's over yet either. Just saying, like, yeah.
You can't say that this stage of their dynasty is over. The stage where Kelce and Mahomes are the 1-2 punch to punch their ticket to the Super Bowl. You can say that that part of the dynasty is closed and they are going to have to retool. I don't think you're going to see the Chiefs in the Super Bowl the next 2 or 3 years. I really don't. They could be in the mix in the playoffs. But look at their division. It's not going to be a cakewalk anymore.
Nope.
Chargers have definitely improved immensely. The Broncos definitely improved. We saw it with Sean Payton. And the Raiders, they just signed Pete Carroll, like we talked about, and they hired Chip Kelly as their offensive coordinator. They have a good team. They made the playoffs what, 2 years ago, I think it was. So they're not going to have a cakewalk anymore in that division. So I think that they're going to have to do it quickly, and they're going to have to do it, I guess, you know, economically too, because Patrick Mahomes has a lot of money wrapped up in him. So, you know, what are you going to do? Is he going to take a pay cut? Because I really don't see him taking a pay cut. I really don't. I don't think he's that kind of guy. He's got his money. He's going to want to keep it. Do I think that the Chiefs dynasty is as good as the Patriots? No. And I never did to begin with. And, you know, I was, you know, how much I hate the Cowboys to say, like, I don't know if this Chiefs team would have beaten those Cowboys teams in the 90s. I really don't. With Michael Irvin, Emmitt Smith, and Troy Aikman, and Alvin Harper, and that team, those teams were pretty nasty. They were pretty nasty. I don't think this Chiefs team, definitely this last team, would not have beaten any of those Dallas Cowboys teams at all. And that's,
yeah.
And that's saying someone who I can't stand the Cowboys. Like, I don't think that they would even hold a candle to that team. And they would get blown out by all of those teams, really, to be honest.
You could argue that they probably even lose to the Bills teams of the 90s that went to 4 straight Super Bowls and lost.
I would agree. I would agree that you know, that's how hard is it to get to 4 straight Super Bowls, right? That's 4 straight they lost, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even the Vikings that lost 3 straight. Like those Vikings teams. Those are tough ass teams, you know. I don't think this Chiefs team could beat any of those teams at this point. So yeah, their dynasty is a weak dynasty. It's not a strong dynasty as some may say. It's, at least from Missouri area, they're not. It's not as strong as they think it is.
Well, Adam, you're next. You look like you want to disagree. Also, we can hear Doug in the background. Maybe he disagrees too.
Dougie,
you heard that over the mic?
Yeah. Doug? Yes, I did.
Yeah, he's been crying. He's been looking for toys to play with.
Many such cases, but anyway, continue.
Yeah, so the only thing, so my thing is, I hear a lot of this belief that making five Super Bowls in 7 years is unique. Does nobody understand that the Patriots did it 5 minutes prior?
No, recency bias is a hell of a thing, man.
Tom Brady did, but it's not unique for a quarterback to make it that far in such a short time. But what I will say is, this is in the Chiefs' defense. Again, when I opened up the show, I said making it there with the chance to win is still good. I still think that helps your legacy. You got there. And the idea that the 70s Steelers, the 60s Packers, the 49ers, that those teams didn't lose. They did lose. They just didn't lose in the Super Bowl. They didn't make it far enough in those other years. Joe Montana started in 14 different seasons. He won 4 Super Bowls. That's 10 years where Joe Montana was the starting quarterback and did not even make it to the Super Bowl.
He was hurt a lot of those years too.
He was hurt a lot of those years,
yeah.
But in a lot of the other years, so I think there were 2 years. There was 1 year that he missed the entire season. I don't believe I counted that one in the 14 years. His rookie year, he really didn't start. He only started 1 game. But that's still, out of his entire career, most of it he did not make a Super Bowl. And the same thing with Terry Bradshaw. The same thing with Troy Aikman. Those Cowboys teams won 3 Super Bowls. The rest of the years, they didn't get anywhere. So I guess my point is, like, making it there is still good. Tom Brady made it to 10. If he didn't make those other 3, that wouldn't have been better for his legacy. Because he still got there with the chance to win. Now, they should have won in 2007. That's not an imperfect team that he just took and gave him a chance. That's a team that probably should have won. 2011, they probably shouldn't have been there. 2017, that was a very vulnerable Patriots team. Probably shouldn't have been there.
That 2011 defense was terrible.
So they literally had Julian Edelman playing corner at some points.
Yeah.
I believe their top corner during that time was Devin McCourty. And that was
before he made the move to safety.
That was, I believe, his rookie year, where he was actually a pretty good corner. It's just they found out he was better.
McCourty wasn't drafted in 2011.
It was 2010. He was drafted in 2010. Yeah.
Okay, so then that was when he started to suck. Okay. Either way, those are years where that still helps when you take an imperfect team. Like what Patrick Mahomes just did. Don't let that 15-2 record fool you. This was a very bad, as far as offense goes, this was a very bad Chiefs team that somehow made it to the Super Bowl. And it was the same thing with the year prior. They made Super Bowls that they probably shouldn't have been in, and they also won last year. The year before, in 2022, that was an impressive year. So the guy who is able to erase some of your deficiencies and make the team better than it is, that's still important. So I think that's the only thing that I will point out about this. Is a big criticism that's been all over the Chiefs in the last few days, is that they lost the Super Bowl, so therefore it's bad. Yes, it's bad that they lost, but it's still good that they got there. I think what we're criticizing, and it's a fair criticism, is the manner in which they lost. You got blown out in both Super Bowls by a combined 40 points. That's not good. That's terrible. All I'm saying is those 2 times that you made the Super Bowl are going to help in the long run. And I think it's a good lesson for the Chiefs as well. If they're not battle tested, if they're not hitting some adversity, then they're not. Then maybe they don't improve. Maybe they get too complacent, right? They responded to that Super Bowl loss pretty well in 2020. I mean, you've made the conference championship every year since. You've made the Super Bowl in 3 out of the 4 years since then. So it's important to understand all the other dynasties. Those teams did lose. It's not that 4-0, the Steelers were 4-0 in Super Bowls. They never lost. No, they did. They just didn't. They didn't lose
the Super Bowl. They didn't lose the Super Bowl.
They didn't lose the Super Bowl. They made it to the Super Bowl, but in the years where they were imperfect, the quarterback wasn't able to take them to the next level, to give them a chance to win. That's the only point that I have. And an issue that people used to hold that against Tom Brady whenever they lost Super Bowls. I'm going to be consistent and come to Mahomes' defense here too. He got him there. Again, I will stand there right there with you when you say the manner in which they lost, getting blown out, is bad. Yes. All I'm saying is he got him there. That's important.
Yeah. No, he did. I also just came across this stat line as well. Comparison of Mahomes' 5 Super Bowls versus Brady's first 5. Mahomes is slightly better completion percentage, just one less pass attempt, one more completion. So evens out there. A few more passing yards, touchdown to interception ratio. Brady has a better one, 92 to Mahomes, 10-7. Brady took less sacks, obviously threw less interceptions. That was the biggest thing with Brady, especially when they made the switch from Bledsoe to Brady, was because Brady didn't take sacks. Bledsoe got too scared sometimes. Here's the thing that really catches my eye. Total EPA, effective play average. Mahomes, 7.4. Brady, 33.6.
What?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. EPA per game, 1.5 for Mahomes, 6.7 for Brady.
Wow.
Insane.
That's insane. That's an insane number.
You look at, on top of that, you look at Brady's losses. Like, he threw for way more yards than Mahomes' Super Bowl MVP runs.
Yeah.
And I would it's apples and oranges at this point.
Yeah, it really is. Also, apples and oranges are not. One more thing, I'm genuinely getting tired of the Mahomes loses because of the O-line arguments when he holds onto the ball too long. So for me, as far as to say the Chiefs dynasty, you all have said, you know, some say, you know, I mean, we all agree, though, it's not looking great, but you can't close the door on them. And Adam's like, well, you know, at least he got there, which is a valid point. But I want to get into the specifics. Let's talk the immediate future. So as I mentioned earlier, the Chiefs and the Eagles are co-favorites to make it back to the Super Bowl again. You know, they're both co-favorites to win. But I mentioned the Eagles, what to look forward to this offseason. Kansas City is arguably in a worse spot. So here's the thing. The Chiefs have a whopping $15.7 million in cap space. And before you in the comments say, Mahomes can restructure, I will counter with, he already did. And Kelsey has shown no urge to restructure. Neither has Chris Jones. And if Kelsey retires, that's even worse because now you can't play with that money like at all. It just becomes dead like that. And you have $15.7 million. And for Kansas City, oh my God, you've got quite a few free agents. So for starters, basically all of your noteworthy receivers not named Xavier Worthy are free agents. Guys like Hollywood Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, and Juju Smith-Schuster. On their own, they're not great, but that's like three of your top four receivers gone. And starting safety, Justin Reed, he's going to be 28. He's gone. Or at least his contract's done, at least. Lineman Charles Omenihu, not a big name to us, but Kansas City knows full and well how important they are. Welcome back, Adam, by the way. I know I'm messing with you. But you know, and guys like Tershawn Wharton as well. You know, he's important. He's not flashy, but he's very important. Tackle DJ Humphreys, solid swing guy. Was a bit banged up this year. He also free agent. Or running back, Samaje Perine, one of your good receiving guys, and Kareem Hunt, free agents. I know what you're thinking. Well, sure, like the bulk of their depth guys are gone, but it could be worse, to which I say, and it does. Here are the big ones. Star guard Trey Smith and star linebacker Nick Bolton. So you have all that. You have like your entire team. Basically, like I said, you know, they didn't have that high-end talent outside of Mahomes and like McDuffie and Jones, right? But now you got Smith and Bolton as free agents. And to all the Kansas City fans are saying, well, we can use the franchise tag. I'll counter with, well, you only get one, so you're going to have to make a choice. Do you try to shore up your defense and bring back Bolton? Well, Trey Smith would immediately get gobbled up on the open market. Or do you want to salvage that O-line, you know, and keep Smith and then let your defense regress because Bolton's going to get snatched up too? So you're basically going to have to choose. And even still, one of my mottos, I say this to Adam, and he rolls his eyes every time he hears it. for free agency is that you never have as much money as you think you do. I liken it to getting your paycheck before and after tax. Because when you take your, when you have like your cap space, right, for the Chiefs, not a lot. A good GM, and most GMs do, will set aside about, depending on where you're picking, good rule of thumbs, 10 mil, 10 million for your rookies. You know, rookie deals are cheap, but you still got to pay them. So that's about 10 mil gone. And on top of that, you have to set aside money to re-sign your starters. In the Chiefs' case, not a lot of high-end guys are leaving, but it's more of a quantity issue, you know, where you have a lot of holes to fill on top of the two big ones. So that is already going to be a tough ask. And quantity aside, Smith and Bolton leaving possibly is going to hurt. And then once you remove that, then you're left with, you know, the real world equivalent of disposable income, you know, what you can use in free agency to improve. You don't have a lot of that. And until Kelce and Jones want to restructure their deals, which they said they are not willing to do, which Kelce probably might retire, and Mahomes already did restructure his deal, it might be very ugly. And who knows, they might not even make it back to the Super Bowl this year. And I guess it just depends on some of the other teams in the AFC. For example, I'm sure you've heard Brandon Bean, GM of the Buffalo Bills, said that outright that they're probably not going to be big spenders at all. And a lot of Bills fans are trying to shake that off and say, oh, it's a bait and switch. You know, they're going to spend through their face. Yeah, because he would never tip his hand. Okay, counterpoint, there's 17, almost 18 million in the hole, 17.9. The Bengals, they do have a fair amount of cap space last time I checked, but I don't know if it's going to be enough to fix their entire defense. They have 44 million, but you got to remember, sure, you can get Higgins back, but you also need to get back Hendrickson, and Chase needs a new deal, so you're going to have to make some cuts there. The only team in the AFC that is an immediate threat that has a substantial amount of space is probably the Chargers, who have 65 mil, and they can throw a lot around. And the Chiefs in your own division, the Raiders have a good lure to come to your team with Pete Carroll and Tom Brady. They have 92 million, and the Patriots, they're far off, but with a competent head coach and what looks like the future QB secured in Drake May, they have 122 million.
Wow.
So, yeah, so there might be some of those bottom feeders that might start nipping at your heels in 2 to 3 years. So for Kansas City, you have to worry about the new wave of good teams, not just like Buffalo and them. So that is, I think, the state of the Chiefs dynasty, is that it could get really rocky with the cap. And finally, you know, we're quickly approaching an hour and a half, just rapid fire here. No break, no nothing. Mike, your Eagles offensive coordinator Kellen Moore has been named the head coach of the New Orleans Saints. It has been made official today. Posted on Fumble Rooski. You listening at home, please go like it if you haven't already. You'd be very generous. That's right, listeners. I'm talking directly to you. But you're an Eagles fan, Mike. You're going to go first. Just lost your OC. What's going through your mind? I know you said you weren't phased all that much, but let's hear directly from you.
You know, when they signed Kellen Moore, I wasn't too thrilled. He was a pass first, run second coordinator. So, and he was a former Cowboy. So again, like a lot of negativity towards him anyway for me. Am I sad to see him go? You know, I would like to see him stay and run it back. Like Sirianni even said it in his post game. Let's run it back, but. You know, he's going to go to New Orleans. They have a dumpster fire going down there anyway. You know, let him go. It's like Jalen Hurts is used to having coordinators come in and out of his life every other year. So, you know, the Eagles lost after the Super Bowl. They lost Shane Steichen, and they got a new guy, and they got another new guy. So I'm not surprised. You know, you're going to want guys that have Super Bowl pedigrees. Take them. They can have them. I'm indifferent. They can have them. I'm not gonna miss them. I have no idea who the Eagles are gonna bring in. There's talks really quickly about Frank Wright. I'm good with that. If they want to bring him in, I'm happy with that. But we'll see. I'm not really too concerned yet about that.
Right. Adam or Chris? Doug?
Yeah. he wants to go outside. I'll give him in a second. This, I mean, the Saints kind of entered the coaching pool a little late, and it's not to say that Kellen Moore won't be a bad head coach, but they certainly did not exactly get the pick of the litter. And this guy could be good, but they also just didn't do themselves any favors by waiting.
All right, Adam, go take care of your dog. But yeah, I don't mind the hire. I mean, the fact of the matter is whoever New Orleans was going to hire as their head coach, I don't think it really mattered at all if they went and got Mike McCarthy, Kellen Moore, Bill Belichick, friggin' whatever name you throw out there, they're going to have to deal with. Great, now my dog's going off in the background. I don't know if you guys can hear that. But
it's fine.
But I don't think it really matters who you hired as your head coach. You're in cap hell regardless. And the Saints, I mean, I kind of just see the Saints as sort of in a similar boat as the Steelers. Not really, though. Like, this is a team where you just got to clean house and just start over again. Doesn't matter who you have as your head coach. You just got to clean house and start over again, so you're not in this constant purgatory of being in cap hell and being limited on what you can and can't do, having to be stuck with Derek Carr as your quarterback and wasting away Alvin Kamara and his incredible seasons that he's been having. You just gotta finally pull the trigger at some point, and the Saints haven't been able to face the music and do that.
You know, Chris, I think you're right. So real quick, and I've said this off camera, and I'm pretty sure I've said it on camera, and I'm going to say it again. Of all seven open, I believe it was seven, open coaching spots this offseason, the Saints far and away are the least attractive. Mickey Loomis is just an idiot GM. I remember when the Saints nicknamed him the Cap Wizard. Well, now look where you are. You can't kick the can down the road anymore. You have no future. You can't afford any splash signings. Time is the only thing that's going to heal you, because you have all these old guys locked into awful contracts, and you are $60 million over the cap.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And honestly, I wouldn't be shocked if they did what New England had to do back. I think it was 2020, the year they drafted Kyle Duggar, where New England had so much dead money. They were so far over the cap where they had to trade their first round pick because they straight up just could not afford to pay a first rounder's salary, because they had like Brady, the phantom years on Brady's deal. You had Gronk, Van Noy, someone else who they still had. It wasn't there anymore. But yeah, the Saints just have too much dead money, and you have no franchise quarterback. Cam Jordan's probably retiring, but good luck, Kellen Moore. I'm sure you totally won't be scapegoated. He probably will.
He will be.
Absolutely. And that does it for this episode. Does anybody have anything else they want to say before we end here?
I said thanks, guys, for having me on here again. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I enjoy it every time I come on. And have a good offseason, and we'll see you during the draft time.
Hey, I'd welcome it, and I'm sure the rest of us would too.
Hell yeah, fucking right, my man.
Yep. So that will do it for us tonight. Thanks for listening. We have new episodes out on Tuesday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and Fridays at 5. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, and we have all of our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Also, be sure to follow our Instagram at FumbleRooski_podcast to keep up with our podcast and latest coverage of the NFL. Also, be sure to drop a follow to for Mike's podcast, Squawking Eagles Podcast. You're definitely going to want to listen to that and keep track of that if you're an Eagles fan. But until then, we'll see you next time. Over and out.